Welcome to Foster the Podcast.
Oh no!
Welcome to Foster the Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Foster. Christy's still out on baby duty. Christy's at home. She said she's hooked up like a cow to a breast pumping machine, and she's getting thrown up on. So we wish her speedy recovery. Go to fosterthepodcast.com for our show, and also check out our sponsor of the show, Bouquet in a Box. If you guys are looking for something for Mother's Day, go to bouquetinabox.com, type in promo code FOSTER. You save 15% off flowers for mom for Mother's Day. Ivan, how are you doing this morning?
I'm all right. I'm great.
Christy's at home getting thrown up on by babies. Ivan's dying of something.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, you know why you don't know what it is? Because you haven't been to the doctor.
No. This is my life, Justin. This is what I do. If something like comes at me, I ignore it.
Sure.
Because it gives me anxiety to face things.
Correct.
Can you imagine going to the doctor and finding out what I have?
No.
In my head, I already have.
No, I wouldn't go either. I'm siding with you, but it's probably not good.
2 a.m, my wife boiled a big pot of water and thyme, like the herb, thyme, T-H-Y-M-E.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we didn't think it was that abstract concept.
She was just boiling a clock.
Can I get 60 minutes boiled, please? Yeah.
That's our guest this week, Christian Piper, dude. Thank you for coming on, man.
My pleasure.
Do you go to the doctor when you're sick?
I used to not, but my wife has turned me into a real person, so I do now.
They do that.
Yeah.
Wives and girlfriends do that.
Yeah, I remember being sick for like months and just being like, oh, it'll pass. It'll pass. I'm like going to work and spreading illness everywhere I go.
I'm with Ivan, man. Like, dude, I haven't been to the doctor in 5 years. I haven't been to the dentist in 7. I just ignore shit. Like, if bad stuff, like if bills comes up, like I just don't open the envelope. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I deal with shit.
Yeah, it's the same reason I have 2 unpaid parking tickets.
Right. You only have 2. I have like 9.
Well, the other 3 they took from the tax return.
Yeah,
they just automatically took them.
Christian, you know they do that out here in California?
No, that's some.
You're married though, so you're all your bills are paid up. But if you're a single piece of shit, I guess you're married too. You're just a piece of shit.
No, they can't take any money up because I owe money on my taxes every year, so they can't take any out.
Here's what they do: if you get money back and you owe the city money, they just take it.
Oh my gosh!
With the fees and you can't negotiate it.
They just give you a receipt.
Yeah. They just take it.
That's horrible.
Dude, I got
it. You know what? I was kind of relieved. Like, whoa,
it's
half
nice,
my tickets.
But let me make that call.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Let me make that decision. I was so excited. Dude, I walked up to the bank with an envelope with my tax return in it, and I walked up to the ATM machine, and I opened the envelope, and it was just a thank you receipt from the city, from the city of Los Angeles.
Like, you still owe us
$200. Yeah, right? Yeah. So, Ivan, you've been coughing for 2 weeks straight, and you haven't gone to the doctor yet. Dude, I'm with you, man. Like, my teeth physically hurt. Like, I need to go to the dentist so bad, and I'm just, like, afraid of what they're going to say, so I just don't go.
Well, you only pay attention to problems you can afford to fix.
Right.
That's the way to get through life.
Yeah.
Well, I was just under the impression that the body has an immune system.
It does.
And when you're taking, like, medication, you're just covering up the symptoms and letting your body fight off the whatever's
going on. No, that's absolutely not how medication works. Like, there are medications that treat symptoms.
When your head hurts, you take an Advil. You're not removing the headache. You're just covering it up.
Right, but if you have brain cancer and you take chemo,
right,
then you're fixing the cause of your migraine.
If you have brain cancer and you take an Advil.
Dude, if I go to the doctor and he says chemo right now.
That'd be great news.
Did you know how many like more listeners we would get? It'd be amazing.
Oh, jeez.
Just think of the show, Ivan. Stop being so selfish. I'm with you, though, man. Like Christy is always, she's pressured me to have kids. She wants me to have kids. And she's like, when are you going to get your girlfriend pregnant? We need kids. I'm like, Christy, like, I'm not ready to have kids.
Maybe once I can afford to go to the dentist.
Exactly. That, and that was my point. Like, I had a really bad eye infection last week. Like, really bad. Yeah, like, my left eye was bloodshot. Mm-hmm. I couldn't open it. And I went to my eye doctor, and they wrote me a prescription. The eye drops was $100. And I was like, well, good thing I have two eyes. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, you just didn't get it?
I just walked away. Like, I tried to make bathtub eye drops in there. But I'm going to have kids. I can't even afford.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, my dental.
Well, they're way more expensive. Because they have to go to the dentist, too. But then they also have all their kid expenses.
Right, exactly. Like, my health insurance is buying an eye patch. Like,
That's another thing. I have
and no, it's irresponsible to put a kid into that situation.
Exactly, too. Right.
It's like, it's one thing for me to be like, I'm just going to die, and that's okay.
Right. You
know? My wife will marry someone hotter. her life will probably be better. But if I have a kid, then that kid's going to have a stepdad. I know I'd be cooler than any stepdad.
Right.
So it's
almost better to be the stepdad, right? Like, that's the moral of the show is just never be the father, always be the stepdad.
Be the stepdad. Well, absolutely. That's easy.
Right.
Because it's not your job to make him be a good person.
You just have somebody to hang out with.
Yeah. You just have to not ruin his life.
Right. Right. I think I would probably also find a way to do that, too. Yeah, she called me yesterday. She's like, Justin, I'm hooked up to a machine. They're pumping milk out of me every 4 hours. I've been thrown up twice.
Motherhood's so beautiful.
Right, but in the same sentence, she's like, so when are you going to have kids? Like, this is not a good selling point.
I'm hooked up to a milking machine, too, but that's just for personal enjoyment.
It's just a fetish. I'm sure there's a website for that.
I think you'd be a good dad.
I think I would, too.
I'd
be a good dad. I'd be an awesome stepdad. Because the only expectation is like, yo, I didn't leave you. You know what I mean? I'm still here.
Yeah. How about beggars can't be choosers? Right,
exactly. Yeah, like 90% of your job's done.
Right, exactly. I got to make sure like you get eye drops and that you know, I take you to baseball practice or whatever. I saw this thing. Did you, April Fools was, are you a big April Fools fan?
So no. I get got sometimes.
I think that you would be, you seem like the type of, Ivan, you seem like the guy that who would like set up like elaborate pranks like a month in advance. No,
I never have, no.
Pornhub, did you see what Pornhub did?
No, I didn't see.
On April Fool's, if
I
you
totally
went to
suck.
Pornhub. Did you see if you click on a video, a box popped up and it said, thank you for sharing this video. And it has the Facebook logo.
Oh my God.
Which I thought was the greatest April Fool's Day prank
that
of all time.
That is hilarious.
That seems totally counterintuitive for them to do that.
Exactly.
Just remind everyone. Just remind everyone how ashamed they are about what they're doing.
Right. But how many people did it deter, really?
Right.
I'm sure like one person was like, oh my gosh.
Most of them are looking for the shame. That's why they go there.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. Pornhub now has automatically shared this video to your social media accounts. And then it says, thanks, Pornhub, with an exclamation point. Like they just did you a favor. I would lose my mind.
I always think it's so counterintuitive, the idea of pranks, to do a prank on April 1st, because everyone knows
it's so hacky,
it's just so obvious. So if you're trying to prank someone, don't do it on the day for pranking.
Right,
do it on another day and then you can actually prank someone.
Right,
that's what makes it cool. Like if you could pull it off on the day that everyone's looking for pranks, that means it was a good freaking prank.
But if it's that good, at a certain point, a prank just becomes like being a really bad person. Like,
right,
like
yeah, exactly.
Like,
right.
If you sell something that hard, like, and then you're like, just kidding. Then it's like, well, I can never trust you again.
Right. If you do it on April 2nd, you're just an asshole.
I remember my favorite April Fool's prank was on my dad. That's fun. Pranking your parents when you're a kid and feeling like you can get away with it because of the day of the year it is. We saran wrapped the toilet. my dad was so mad.
This is, you grew up in, my phone rang and the caller ID said Beaver Dam, Kentucky.
Beaver Dam.
And I just knew it was you.
Uh-huh.
What is Beaver Dam?
Well, first thing you should know is all the best towns are named after animal houses.
Right. Okay.
That's a thing.
Right.
No, Beaver Dam's a really small town. It's rural in western Kentucky, 3,000 people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, tiny.
I didn't think it would be that many.
Oh, really?
I thought it would be like 300.
No, 3,000. I mean, we had a Walmart.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, all Walmart, right. McDonald's.
I've been to Beaver Dam.
Have you?
Yeah.
No. For what?
I've been to that Walmart in Beaver Dam.
Why?
Because I used to own a trucking company, and I would do a regional trucking.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
One
of my accounts was the batteries, the car batteries, and we'd drop them off. I've been to Beaver Dam, Kentucky, multiple times.
People that truck a lot of times know Beaver Dam, not even because they're dropping stuff off there, but because there's like some really good truck stops in Beaver Dam. Because it's the intersection of two giant interstates or freeways. I guess they're not their state, but it's an intersection, and there's a tiny town just a few miles away. So you've been to Beaver Dam. That's my hometown, man.
Oh, that's cool.
Used to hang out in that Walmart parking lot in high school.
But yeah, well, I mean, where else are you going to hang out?
We used to do that all the time.
We want to go, let's go to Walmart, sit in the parking lot.
We used to do that, too. We used to do that at Sonic. Do you guys have Sonics?
Yeah.
Sonic, I don't think they're out here, but they're like the burger. Yeah. Like we would just go and sit in Sonic. Because when you're young, like you just hang out.
But see, that's what Sonics are made for. Like it's like this 50s, like,
right.
You know, drive-in kind of restaurant.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But, like, it was Walmart. it's like a store, right. You know, and it has a parking lot for people going to the store.
Right.
And then kids drinking beer.
Right, exactly, like, yeah. Because no Walmart employee is going to call the police.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's kids drinking beer in the parking lot of a Walmart. Like, well, yeah, that's a Walmart parking lot.
Well, and that's where you end up, because first you cruise the strip.
Right. The strip of Beaver Dam?
Yeah, the Highway 231.
Mm-hmm.
It goes, you can go from McDonald's to Taco Bell and back.
Oh, nice.
And it's about a mile. And Walmart's right in the middle.
But it was so fun, though, right?
No.
No, you knew you were miserable? You knew you were miserable? I used to love doing that shit. Like, just driving around with your friends and, like, you know, drinking beer and being stupid.
I do miss Beaver Dam. I like it. I like the small town thing, although my dream would be to live in like Beaver Dam and have it be like 30 minutes from Nashville or some town.
Sure,
you
know, right. Where
it's
yeah.
really close and you can do that because it does get old. Like, I mean, how many times like can you just talk about the same dumb bullshit with stupid people?
I want you to work.
Like, it's just, it gets, that S-Town podcast came out. I don't know if you listened to that.
No.
It was a big thing about. Well, it's about this guy in the South that lives in this shitty town, and he reaches out to this radio journalist about doing a story about what he claims to be a murder in his hometown that got covered up. And they present it like a murder mystery, but it ends up just being like a study into this weirdo in the South. And they treat it like it's this most bizarre thing. I'm like, I knew 30 people like that dude. Like, quit acting like this is some like wacky, like unbelievable person. It's like, no, that's just all you people just live in cities. And then you listen to podcasts about poor people, and you're like, what?
Right,
like,
yeah.
What?
That's literally 90% of the South and the Midwest.
Yeah, like, I knew 10 people that podcast could have been about. That's just people.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I know, it's like the documentary. Did you ever see The Wonderful Whites of West Virginia?
Oh, I didn't, but I've heard of it.
Yeah,
I've,
but it's dude, I went to school with, like, 10 of those dudes, you know? They love pills. Uh-huh. They love fighting and getting arrested.
Yeah.
Like, just the South.
No, I mean, it's like, of course this weekend someone from my high school, like, got really high on meth and then took his grandparents hostage. Like, that, that happens. That's just, that's a weekend.
Right.
I went back home to Kentucky, like, 6 years ago, and I was a substitute teacher for, like, a year, like a long-term sub. So I'd go into the same class for, like, 2 months or something like that. For a while I was helping out in this English class, and it was senior English. It was senior remedial English. So these are kids that all day long, because you have to take an English class every year in Kentucky. That's the only class they were taking. Other than that, they're at the vocational school.
Okay.
So they're just going and welding and then having to come over to the high school, and they don't have pencils, they don't have paper, they don't give a shit. Like, they just, they're there because they absolutely have to be.
Right.
And so you're like talking to these kids and it's just like, when was the last time you read a book? Like, second grade? Like, and you're trying to like make them read a book. And they're just talking about their weekend and how drunk they got and how much drunk driving they did. And
right.
You're just like, can you wear a seat? Like, you don't even try and tell them not to drive drunk.
Right.
Like, will you wear a seatbelt?
Right.
And they're like, nah, man, live free or die hard. You know, it's just like, no, I have a cousin who got in a car accident and he actually got strangled by his seatbelt.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't
yeah.
wear one now.
Right.
I was raised like that.
You met one person that died because of their seatbelt.
Probably didn't even die. Probably just got rash on his throat.
Those things will kill you, man.
It sprained his shoulder, man.
If I'm getting in a car wreck, I'm going to go straight through that windshield.
Yeah.
And I want to lay in soft grass.
Right, exactly. No one wants to die in Beaver Dam, though. Buckle your fucking seatbelt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want you to go back there and record your... I want it to be live from Beaver Dam. I really want your special to be there. I think it'll be
amazing.
I thought
about doing like a Beaver Dam comedy festival.
Oh, my God.
And just taking like 10 comedians to my hometown and doing like... horrible shows that no one wants to go to in town.
Right.
And
do you have a VFW or a...
No.
That's the last night of the showcase.
It just became... It was a dry county up until this last year, and they just voted to finally allow alcohol sales in our county. It used to be you have to drive to get your liquor and get drunk and then drive home.
Oh, right.
That's how that happened. So, right.
It's such a great business model, too.
Yes, it's wonderful.
That's what I don't understand. Like, Texas, like, the parts where I grew up, it was like that for a long time. Like, you couldn't buy alcohol in certain parts, but you couldn't buy liquor on Sundays.
Yeah.
I still don't understand that.
Oh, I lived in Utah for, like, 10 years, and they have the most bizarre liquor laws in the world. They actually just recently passed... they lowered the drunk driving limit to 0.05.
That's like...
That's having blood. Like,
right.
As I'm just like, that's, if you're not a 0.05, you're having a bad day. You're a grumpy Gus if you're not a 0.05.
Right. That's like you could take a NyQuil two nights before and still test positive for that.
It's wacky.
That's
and
insane.
So, there's that. They have this law where if you're a restaurant and you serve mixed drinks... Mm-hmm. They have this idea that if kids see you mixing drinks, they're going to think it looks like so much fun.
Uh-huh.
So there's no flair allowed, no like mixology flair. And you have to mix your drinks behind a wall that's at least 8 feet tall.
Right.
So they call it the Zion curtain.
Okay.
That's what they call it. And this idea that kids can't see you mix alcoholic drinks.
Because they're going to want to drink.
Yeah.
But like living in Utah makes you want to,
exactly.
You know what I mean? You can't like hide Utah.
What makes something seem like more fun than hiding it behind a wall?
Exactly. Like, yeah. Telling someone that you can't do that or see it.
Oh, that's
makes
so much fun. You can't look at it.
Right. It's Don't garnish that with a cherry.
Yeah. It's
you absurd. Get that lemon out of that Long Island iced tea right now, sir. That's like, crazy.
At gas stations or grocery stores, the only beer you can get has to be 3.2 alcohol content.
Okay. So right.
Really weak beer.
Yeah.
If you go to like liquor stores, which are run by the state, you can get higher. But it's just all these really bizarre. It's just, and what happens is that you start at prohibition. You start with no alcohol allowed. Mm-hmm. And then they've negotiated every point. Like every time they want to have more freedom with liquor, then it's like, well, you better give us this. And so they carve out all these weird little bizarre regulations to try to protect people.
Right.
When it's just let people make their own
decisions. Yeah, exactly. It's like, first of all, so if you're a bartender, right, and someone orders a Long Island iced tea or whatever, mm-hmm. so you now have to go into like behind a special curtain and mix this drink up?
Yes, and that's another thing. A traditional Long Island iced tea that you would get in most places, it's got a lot of alcohol.
Yeah.
So it has to have less.
Okay.
So you're mixing a very weak Long Island iced tea, basically, because you can only have one total shot of alcohol in the whole drink.
Really?
So you're mixing like a third of what, because it's got tons of stuff in it. It's got like,
yeah, it's got vodka, four different, triple sec, gin, rum, tequila.
Yeah. So
it's about 2.5 ounces of booze.
Right. And so you have to limit it to a half ounce of booze.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's crazy. You got to limit it, but, and also hide it from
so
from
most
people.
Places don't have a Long Island iced tea in Utah.
Okay.
Because at restaurants, you have to order food. You can't just order.
You can't just go in for a drink.
A lot of like even like hotel bars and stuff, if they serve food, if their liquor license is one that's for people that also serve food, you have to buy food with your alcohol.
Okay. All right.
People take these laws seriously?
Yeah. Well, because they'll shut you down.
Oh, jeez.
They'll shut the establishment down. Okay. I got it. Wow. Yeah. Now, were you Mormon?
I was raised Mormon. So I was, you know, full on Mormon until I was like 26.
Okay.
So I was raised Mormon in Kentucky, which is weird. There aren't a lot of Mormons around there. My family was kind of implanted there. Mm-hmm. My parents are both Mormon. So then when I was 18, I went to college at BYU to go to the Mormon college in Utah. And that was a weird experience. And I stayed there for a little while. I went on my church mission to Brazil for 2 years.
Okay.
And then when I was 26, I started like, okay, this is enough.
I've done this.
Enough of this.
I want 2 ounces of booze in my Long Island.
Exactly. This is, yeah. it got to be a little too much. And I think I always just played along because I knew my family.
Sure.
You know, it's tied up in your family mm-hmm. and all this stuff. I never had like a real spiritual experience that made me believe in Mormonism. Mm-hmm. I was just playing a part.
Right. You were doing what you were told.
And you can only do that for so long.
Yeah. I'm surprised you made it till 26.
I went kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of went nuts because of it. Like, it was just too much pressure.
Yeah.
To hold yourself and to lie. Mm-hmm. Like, because you're going up and you're speaking in church and you're supposed to bear your testimony about how you know this is true. And you have to make up the story of how you learned that it was true. And I went to Brazil and lied for 2 years to poor people in Brazil, trying to convince them to join a church and then send 10% of their income to Salt Lake City. Like,
oof, yeah,
it's really fucked up. And it has like a real painful psychological effect on a person.
It was the same age for me, 26.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
it's like that, you know, your frontal lobe develops and you actually start having opinions about things. And
you were raised Christian.
Yeah. Baptist.
Baptist. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Everyone in my hometown was Baptist.
Yeah.
In fact, that I just learned this recently, the name Beaver Dam, the town wasn't called Beaver Dam. There was a church there called Beaver Dam Baptist Church. And then they named the town after the church. Like, it's that.
Wow.
It's that central to. But, yeah, like, it has a psychological toll on you. And honestly, that's what drew me to comedy. When I first found comedy,
mm-hmm.
I kind of switched Mormonism for comedy.
Sure.
It's like a religion I actually believe.
Yeah, I was about to say, you made comedy your higher power.
Yeah. Because it's all about honesty. Mm-hmm. And you get rewarded for being honest.
Right.
And whereas it's the opposite. It was just so freeing and so liberating to be able to say, you know, even reveal, like, shameful things about myself on stage mm-hmm. and have people respond by laughing and liking me.
Right.
As for who I was, not for someone I was pretending to be.
Mm-hmm. How does your, what does your family think about you doing comedy?
I think.
do we have to change your name for this podcast?
Okay. No, I'm open with them. I think they're proud of, like, they think I'm good at it. Mm-hmm. Like, they like it. I know.
So they have seen you before.
Oh yeah, lots of times. Oh,
okay.
I think particularly my mom is a little sheepish about some of the content that I talk about,
sure.
and language I use, and things like that. She's always frustrated that she can't share
your videos,
my videos, right. because so she gets that. That bugs me a little, but other than that, they're very supportive. Like,
nice.
Yeah,
I think I popped in. You do a really cool show called Adrenaline,
mm-hmm.
and at the lab at the Improv.
Yeah,
I think I popped in one time. Wasn't like a lot of your family there for that show?
Yeah, actually, the first one we did at the Improv because I did that. I did the show Adrenaline for like 2 years in Utah before I moved to LA, and then it took me a little while to find a venue in the Improv lab. Let us do it there, and that was awesome. And the first month we did it, my family just happened to be coming out to visit us and see our place in LA. And so my parents, one of my brothers right. were there, and
oh, that's cool.
My aunt, yeah.
Does it make you nervous performing in front of all them?
No, it's I've done it like the first time. Yeah. Although I had like, I did that really dumb thing where the first time I did an open mic, I invited like,
oh yes,
my brothers
everybody.
And sister.
Yes.
So I had like four people there watching me.
Right.
Do
work
some
shit out.
Bullshit said about Justin Bieber or something. And so I think
I did the exact same thing, dude. My first open mic, I had like 50 of my friends come out.
Yeah.
Like, this is the worst 3 minutes you could possibly think of. And everyone was there.
And it takes you so long to get their, like,
yeah,
their impression of you changed.
I had a good set, though. That was the thing.
Oh,
it was it went great. But like, in retrospect, I'm like, God, this is what I was proud of.
I'm sure it went great. But also you were like at an open mic and they were seeing all this horrible comedy.
Of course. Right. So
and
I look good in comparison.
You look good in comparison. But also they have this like, I know, like, my brothers and sisters are like, I don't want to come to shows.
Right.
If I have to watch all this bad comedy.
Right.
So it took a while for me to convince them, no, now I'm on shows with good comics.
Right.
Like, you can come and you'll like it.
Because they got to sit through an hour of shitty comedy to watch you do like 4.5 minutes,
right.
you know, somewhere.
It's just, it's brutalizing.
Yeah.
It's violent to invite people to a bad comedy show.
Right.
It's
pay money. Order drinks,
oh,
find a babysitter, pay for parking, and then here's an hour of garbage so I can do 5 minutes of of whatever I'm fucking talking about.
Well, and it gets to the point where, at least in Utah, L.A., it's a different vibe because everyone knows that there are great comics in L.A., and there's bad ones too, but everyone knows that there is good comedy mm-hmm. happening here. In Salt Lake, it would happen all the time where when people found out I was a comedian, they're like, oh, are you like a local comedian?
Right.
And it's this attitude. It's like, oh, my friend dragged me to this show right. once They've to watch burned. Her boyfriend, and he was awful, and everyone else on the show was awful.
Right.
So it's this really, that's why it's so important to me. Like when I book something like Adrenaline, I make sure every comedian on it is top notch.
Right.
Because to me, it's like the worst thing you can do to expose people to bad comedy and make people think that that's what.
Right. And then, how many of those people never see a comedy show again?
Yeah.
I did a show one time where a guy walked on stage and he was like older and he ended up like the end of the set, like he was like in his underwear. Right. And he was like like yelling at the audience and I had to like go on after. And I was just like, you know, like round of applause, like whose first comedy show? And like a lot of people clapped. I'm like, okay. Like, and I was like, imagine these people left after that guy. Oh. Right. And then that's just their view of comedy from here on out. Like, hey, you want to go see? Hey, Seinfeld said, no, I don't want to see any comedy ever again.
Nope, I've seen comedy. It's bad. It's comedy is not funny.
Comedy is not for me.
It's really bad and unpleasant.
So you touched on it a second ago. I wonder, what was Mormon college like?
Oh, God.
What was the Mormon college experience?
All right, so to understand, like, so growing up in Kentucky as a Mormon, again, like I said, you're different.
Sure.
Because of that. So, you know, I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, I didn't party too hard. I hung out with kids that did, but I didn't.
Right.
I didn't have sex, you know, people knew that, so girls didn't date me. Right. You know, like, it was, I was very different, but I was a normal person otherwise. Sure. Like, I was funny and, you know, I think I was fun to be around. But then I go to Mormon College, to BYU, and all of a sudden I go from being the good kid, like, automatically. Like, I was the good kid because I didn't smoke, I didn't drink. At BYU, I was the bad kid because I drank caffeinated soda.
Oh,
I drank Coke.
You were the bad boy of the college.
I was the bad boy.
You roll up with a diet Mr. Pibb and like, uh-oh.
I didn't shave every day. I had stubble. Right. I was the bad boy.
Here comes trouble.
I might swear. It's like I was just like, I went immediately from being like the automatic good kid to being the automatic bad kid. And that was a really weird transition to go in. I actually kind of liked I like being the bad. Like, it was fun.
The bad Mormon.
Like being like the one that's kind of on the edge a little bit. But it's frustrating to be around. BYU is not even like Mormonism is a really difficult religion. It's very like strict and very, you know, in your face. You have to be 100% Mormon or nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's an orthodoxy system. It's not, oh, just hang out on the periphery.
Right.
They're constantly trying to pull you into the center or push you out if you're too out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they'll excommunicate you, you know, like, rather than deal with alternate opinions about stuff. And so that's bad enough in Mormonism to comply, to be an Orthodox Mormon. Then at BYU, it's like competitive Mormonism. It's like next level, where it's like, who can be more righteous than the person next to them?
Oh, my God.
And it's painful. And
I would lose my mind.
You're constantly around the biggest douchebags in the world.
Right.
Talking about how great they are. Going out of their way to, like, demonstrate their, you know, devotion to Mormonism. And they're doing it to get dates.
They were motivated to get laid.
Well, yeah, but here's how you get laid in Mormonism, is you get married. And to get married, you have to demonstrate to the women that you're like a righteous Mormon.
Gotcha, okay.
A lot of dudes are faking it because they want to get married because they want a bone.
Right, okay.
And
we're like the same person, me and Christian.
Me and you, yeah.
Just different religions.
Yeah, right. But it's the exact same experience.
Oh, well,
did you
actually
get married in the church?
No. That's what pulled me out. That's the difference. Because I know your story a little bit. How you and your wife got married really young, right?
Because you guys wanted to bone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. I feel really lucky that I didn't do that. I tried. Like my wife that I'm married to now, we dated when we were both Mormon at BYU. Like, we met the first day of freshman orientation when we were 18.
Oh.
And we dated.
You were the bad boy hanging out by the soda machine. <That's> just a pop collar.
And it didn't work out, thankfully, because I feel like if we'd gotten married at that age, like when we were young, we would have kind of held each other into the church. Do you know what I mean? Where like,
yeah,
where you don't want to stray too far because you don't want the other one to be worried. And so you kind of,
even though you both wanted to go out, you would have stayed because you thought that's what the other one wanted.
Right. And in fact,
and it would be shameful to admit that you have doubts, you know.
And you're not just shaming yourself, but you're like you're exposing yourself to your in-laws, like
yeah.
who are strict Mormons, and it's rough.
So did your wife also want?
She left before I did.
So she was out before you did. Okay.
She left when she was like 23.
Okay.
And then I, in fact, we would have, it took me forever to convince her to date me again because, and I didn't realize this at the time. I only found out later once we were like dating, about to get engaged and all that. But the reason she wouldn't date me for years in between the first time and the last time is because she thought that I was too Mormon.
She thought you were still in it.
Yeah. And that I wouldn't be okay. And it's like, oh no, I was looking for any excuse right, to yeah. not be Mormon anymore. Like it was, so wow. it was this thing where I also wasn't sure how far out she was. So
sure.
It was a complicated thing. Where,
so you guys had to feel each other out. Yeah. And see, right. Oh, it's when
she,
so weird.
She saw me do comedy for uh-huh. the first time.
Okay.
And I like did a joke about how it was Mormon, but it was, it's a hack joke, but it was a joke about how I'm Mormon, but my dick ain't, you know, how it was
right,
like,
right.
like I made salt, like, cause part of weird, like part of being a Mormon is you make these covenants, these promises.
Right.
And one of them is that you won't have sex before marriage. And it's like, I made this solemn covenant that I wouldn't have sex, but my dick had no say in that.
Right.
And
yeah.
it's not complying. Like it does. And right. so she heard that. I was like, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm Mormon by my dick, ain't she? She's like, thank God.
And then immediately. No, like that night, she was like, okay.
I'm in.
Yeah, let's do this.
Oh, that's funny.
She asked me to marry her like 2 weeks later.
Really?
Yeah, hypothetically.
Sure.
Because that's what it was. That's what she was worried about, is that she wanted to make sure I wasn't too Mormon.
Mm.
So she's like, hypothetically, would you marry me?
And you were and like, yeah, of course.
I was like, yeah, yeah, I guess. Sure.
That's yeah, awesome.
Hypothetically, yeah. So
do you travel a lot doing comedy?
I did more when I lived in Utah.
Right.
Now that I'm in LA, it's a little, I don't have the same, like in Utah, you're close to all these one-nighters mm-hmm. that I knew the bookers of, you know, sure. Tribble.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. I've done just, some Tribble runs and yoga gigs yeah. and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
So I did a lot of those. And then, but then now that I moved to LA, it's kind of like, well, one, you kind of always want to be in LA doing yeah. comedy. Like
yep.
every night's an opportunity
mm-hmm.
to make something happen. Mm-hmm. So it feels a little, I'd still travel some. I was in Utah and Wyoming and Idaho for like 3 weeks recently. And at the end of that, you're like, I got to get back.
I know. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Like when you first start, like all you want to do is like do the road and be yeah. like a road comic. And then like you start moving out, you're like, I just want to stay here.
Mm-hmm.
Like you get those like I used to like, when I was in Texas, like the LA comics would come and they'd only want to do Friday and Saturday shows. I'm like, who are these pussies? Like, right, do the Wednesday through Sunday. Yeah. You're like, no, yeah, no, I get it now.
Well,
yeah.
if you're gone long enough, all of a sudden it really feels like you get pushed out of the loop
exactly,
on something.
Yeah. You absolutely, people forget about you.
Yeah.
There's so many comics here. People forget.
It's like, oh, I was getting booked on all kinds of stuff and then I was gone for a month and now
right.
my calendar's wide open.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, so it's, yeah, I don't go on the road as much. I go out for festivals occasionally.
Sure.
I went to Boston last year, and that's the town where I've got some comedy friends, and so I do shows surrounding the festival when I go out there, and that's fun. But other than that, it's mostly just I go back to Utah occasionally to do spots because I can get on great shows there
yeah.
at the club, and that's it's really nice to go from, you know, doing mics or loosely or sparsely attended shows in LA
mm-hmm.
to then going and doing, you know, a 15-minute set in front of a sold-out crowd at a club.
Right.
In Utah. Like,
yeah, you almost have to go away to come back, and then they, like, appreciate you more.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, the L.A. comic's coming back. Like, yo.
There's a little of that. The nice thing, Salt Lake is a really interesting comedy town because the owner of the club, Keith Stubbs, he owns Wise Guys, which is in Salt Lake, downtown
There's
Salt
two,
Lake.
Right?
And one in Ogden.
Yeah.
Yeah, those two. And he's really supportive of local comics. Like, there isn't a lot of opportunities because it's just two clubs, you mm-hmm. know, and it's just weekend shows. So, you know, how many people can he get up a week? You know,
right, yeah.
You know, five or six. But if you're one of the people that he likes and gets up, you get on great shows early. He'll headline local people.
Oh, that's cool.
I headlined there, you know, 3 years into comedy.
Really?
Yeah, I got to do a weekend at the Ogden Club.
That's awesome.
He's really supportive in that way. So it's not as much, I know people talk about how, oh, you know, I'm headlining everywhere in the country, but I can't headline my home club.
Right.
Because they have this perception of you as an opener.
Yeah, they remember you from your first set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but he's not that way. So that's good. But there is still like a little where you go back and you're like, what I've noticed is that I feel like you get better faster in LA than in Salt Lake.
Yes. Okay. No, not just in Salt Lake, but like I think any small town, yeah. not small, but like even like, dude, you get less stage time here than you probably did in Salt Lake and, I mean, for Dallas. But you get better faster here for some reason.
For me, it's that I – because I'm going up every day.
Okay.
In Salt Lake, I couldn't do that. In Salt Lake, I could go up 3 or 4 nights a week, max.
Gotcha. Okay.
And there were longer sets, you know, so I might – but then you're also doing your A material
right
in front of an A-plus crowd. Mm-hmm. And you don't learn that much.
Exactly.
From doing material you know will work for okay. a crowd, you know it'll work.
So do you think that's what it is? Like you're able to take more chances out here because yes. the stakes are lower at some of the places we do here? Because like if you're at Wise Guys or for me at the Improv, it's like you're not going to take too many chances
no.
because, you know, it's a weekend show.
Right.
And here you can kind of go out mm-hmm. a little bit more and get weirder.
You can get weirder. You can I feel more of an impulse to write new material because mm-hmm. You're doing mics and shows in front of a lot of the same people.
Right.
And you can you feel that when you've done a set too many times.
Right.
You're like, okay, crowds have kind of stopped responding to this because mm-hmm. they've heard it.
Yeah. So you get they kind of hold you – your peers kind of hold you accountable out here a little bit more.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And so – and then there's downsides to that because you also start playing to an open mic crowd or a comedy
yeah,
crowd.
Yeah, I know.
And there's horrible habits you can learn from that. And then you need to go on the road and realize, oh, none of the shit I wrote this last month works.
Right, none of it works at all.
Because
yeah.
It's all
my buddies in the back are dying laughing, but nobody
in
the front row. Yeah, that's so funny. Did you said you're recording a special?
Yeah.
And it's got to be completely clean?
This is wacky. The last time I was in Utah, I was there for the Golden Spike Comedy Festival.
Uh-huh.
It was awesome. It was the first year. They're going to do it again next year. Stay tuned. People should submit for it. It's really awesome. But when I was out there, the person who books these – in fact, there's this new company called VidAngel,
mm-hmm.
which most people have not heard of.
It sounds like a porn company.
It does. It sounds like a porn site, 100% VidAngel. It's not. It's the opposite of a porn site. It's a clean content streaming service for conservative religious people. It was started by Mormons, but
okay.
it's become popular among evangelicals and other religious people. And what it basically was they would take – famous movies, TV shows, and filter them. So they would create these editing filters so that you could choose to edit out the content that you didn't want to see. So
okay.
if you like, let's say you don't like swearing,
okay.
but you don't care about sex or violence, you can just turn off certain swear words.
Really?
And it'll automatically edit those. They have someone that goes through and marks all the instances of those
uh-huh.
and filters them out for you. So let's say you want to watch Game of Thrones without the titties,
okay.
which a lot of people want to do.
That's the only reason I watch Game of Thrones.
Right. But there are a lot of people that want to watch it, but
right.
they're Mormon or evangelical.
Okay.
So they would go on VidAngel, you pay $1, and you watch an episode of Game of Thrones.
Really? And all the titties are blurred out?
They just skip those scenes.
Oh, scenes are gone. Okay.
It totally skips the scenes.
Wow.
And they had this really elaborate like means of justifying it legally, which technically didn't work.
Right.
Where they were claiming that they had a physical copy of everything that they were streaming. So when you rented it, they actually took a physical copy of it and moved it to a different location so that you were technically renting a physical copy that they were then streaming for you and filtering for you. So they're claiming that it's like a blockbuster.
Okay.
Which, you know, any rental company can get rental copies of movies. You don't have to get a specific license. It's included in the cost of the movie.
Okay.
Anyway, so they were trying to get
That's
around
super
it.
Super interesting.
Way. They got sued, lost all of their content.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Okay.
They had 500,000 subscribers, like
wow,
site users.
Okay.
They lost.
I want to watch Pulp Fiction, but without John Travolta. Done. Yeah. Got it.
Well, and that's part of the problem is a lot of people weren't even using the filtering
mm-hmm.
mechanism.
Right.
They were just doing it because it
was a
buck.
Right. Yeah.
It's a buck. It's
yeah.
cheaper than Redbox.
Right.
And
most of the movies probably aren't on Netflix.
Right.
Right.
And they would have like newer stuff. They would get like, yeah, stuff that wouldn't be on Netflix or they didn't have the licensing agreements
right.
out. So long story short, they have no content
okay.
now. What they now they've started creating their own clean content because they have this user base, no content for them, so they're trying to capitalize on
okay.
that. Who knows how well it'll work, but part of what they're doing are these comedy specials, clean comedy specials. They're recording these specials and they're going to release them just like a Netflix special. And the idea is that you can pay to watch that.
Okay. So and so you, when are you doing yours?
I'm recording mine in 2 weeks.
Okay.
April 21st.
How long do you have to do?
40 minutes.
40 minutes.
It's a 40-minute taping.
Now, can you work that clean?
Yeah, yeah, I can.
Oh, okay.
I mean, doing comedy in Utah, you learn to do clean even if it's not your natural because it doesn't always have to be clean, but to get on certain shows, you have to be.
You have to be clean. So you just start writing clean.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are certain headliners that, you know, Wise Guys will book because it'll bring out, it'll pack it out with people that want clean comedy. People
right.
like Dave Coulier, mm-hmm. Ryan Hamilton. I don't mm-hmm. know if you know Ryan.
Yeah.
Hilarious, but really clean. So if you're opening for Ryan, you can't do anything dirty.
Gotcha.
So you learn to write clean, and it's still a bit of a stretch. It's frustrating to me because I'm not a clean comic. That's mm-hmm. not my MO. I have clean material. I'm also not filthy, though.
Right.
So I'm in this position where I'm trying to take material that isn't strictly clean.
Right. And filter it.
filter
it a little bit. Take the titties out.
Yeah. I'm taking the titties out on my
own act.
And I'm also, you know, leaving out some material that I just can't do that to. And that's frustrating because I'm leaving out some of my best material.
It's right.
Like, this is the first time I've had a chance to record a special, and I'm going in without my best.
And you've got to self-edit material. And take stuff out.
So that's a little frustrating to me. But the nice thing about it is it has a limited audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just the people that want clean comedy.
So you don't
comedy.
Have to burn your material.
Yeah. And right. I'm not going to burn the material. I'm also not, I don't have to like promote it like crazy.
Right.
You know, the people that see it will see it.
Right.
But I don't need to expose it to a wider audience.
You don't have to push
that.
It. Right. Because mm-hmm. there's a difference between working like doing a 40-minute clean set and then doing a 40-minute Mormon Vid Angel set. I'm sure
G-rated.
Like, you have to be G-rated
yeah,
for 40
basically.
Minutes? Oh,
it's
my
like,
God.
It's like you're doing comedy at a ward talent, at a ward, that's a Mormon term, a church talent show.
Okay.
Like, it's like, let me...
I would do 8 minutes. My special would be 8 minutes long and mostly crowd work.
The crowd that I'm going to be doing it for is in Provo, Utah, at this venue called Dry Bar, which, by the name...
Right.
No alcohol.
Right.
It's a dry bar.
They're hiding
it's
in the back
mocktail.
Making right. They're hiding in the back making mocktails so the kids don't see.
Fancy sodas.
Right.
And then this crowd, I know, because I've performed for these kind of crowds. They're gonna be all Mormon, and they're gonna if they are not afraid of you being dirty, they'll laugh at anything and be almost an obnoxiously good crowd.
Right.
I've seen horrible comedy do great at BYU
because
everyone knows they're gonna be clean. And so people are just like eager to show that they like to have a good time.
Right.
And they laugh at
we're cool.
Dumb bullshit. But if you give them any reason to worry, if you just like somehow indicate to them that you might say a swear word at some point, then they clam up and get nervous.
Really?
Yeah, it's bad. Do you know Karen Runtowski?
Uh-huh.
She's so funny.
Yeah.
She recorded one. And I think someone told me this. I don't know if it's true. I should check with Karen. But in one of her tapings, she said, oh, my God. On accident.
Uh-huh.
And that was enough to like.
They locked up.
To lock them up. And she got them loose again because she's a good comic. But like she felt it.
Sure.
Like, you know,
sure,
and that happens. Like
you
say something and it's like, oh, wow. Now I have to re-earn your
trust.
Your trust, which is bonkers, but it's true. So I'm going into my material not only trying to make sure I don't do anything dirty, but trying to make sure I don't make them worry that I might.
Right. Or you right. Yeah. You want to make sure that you have, you don't want to be dirty, but also have a good set, but also not give them reason to worry that you might be dirty.
Yeah. So,
then you have a bad set.
Exactly.
Wow.
So like I'm even like avoiding, you know, talking in a way where it seems like I might do like a sex joke.
Right.
Like if you're talking about, I don't know, it's complicated to explain, but if you are like, if I started talking about religion, even if I'm not going to do any, like I have some religion material that I really like that isn't offensive to any specific religion. And I don't think it's blasphemous, but alludes to the possibility. What if there isn't a God?
Mm.
Can't do that.
No, no way.
No, like they won't even
no
engage
way.
With that possibility.
You should definitely open with, I'm not Mormon, but my dick is. That's the name of the special.
Yeah.
What's the worst gig you've ever done?
Worst gig? Oh.
Or what are some of the hell gigs you've done?
Well, you know I've done those triple rooms.
Yeah, right.
Have you ever done Idaho Falls?
I don't think so.
The Pepper Tree Lounge?
No,
Pepper
I haven't
Mill
done that.
Lounge? One of the two. Anyway, it's notoriously bad. And I did like 6 months in. It was my first road gig.
Uh-huh.
I featured at a show in Idaho Falls. I had no idea what to expect. And I go there, and it's like they're talking. Like the crowd is talking like they're at a rock concert,
right?
And you're doing your material, and they're just talking to
each
other.
Oh, so you're already on stage, and they're just
you're on
to
stage, and they're just like chatting, and no one is looking at you. And like now, I know how to handle that. Mm-hmm. Now I know you have to get in their face, and you have to be loud, and it's obnoxious, but there is a way to get that kind of crowd.
Yeah,
to pay
you learn those little tricks, but 6 months in, you don't have that skill set.
So I'm just like blah 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 blah, like just doing my joke. Like three minutes in, a girl just yells out, "You're not funny."
Oh, God.
And I don't have the skills to respond to that. I'm like, I think I am. And I look at my watch. I have 27 more minutes. I have to be on the stage.
Oh, no.
And then I'm just, I keep going. A few minutes later, she yells out, be better at life. And I'm just like, I'm just trying to get through this.
I also feel that I am.
I did 30 straight minutes of no laughs.
And it's such a beating.
Oh, it's horrible. And I was a bad comic at the time, 6 months in, but I had some good material and no laughs. And I get done and it's just like this wave of like the gratitude at being done, mm-hmm. but also just like the anxiety like ebbing and like you're on this high of like getting through your time and then it's gone. And then I'm like, it's like tears are welling up in the corner of my eyes and I'm just like traumatized.
Right.
And then, you know, you realize, oh, like I'm okay.
Right. Like, yeah.
That's literally none the worst you can do on stage.
Yeah. None of this matters.
Nothing can hurt you.
Right.
So then I don't think I've really been had stage fright since then.
Really?
It's like, that's the worst you can do.
How'd the headliner do?
Headliner was better. He knew what he was doing in that regard, but it was still bad.
Isn't that bad though? Like when that happens and the headliner goes on after you, just annihilates, and you're like, "Damn it,
that's happened."
I hate it so much because you want to like have that misery. It's like you guys want to shit like the car ride home. You guys want like, "Weren't they a shitty crowd?" And the other guy's like, "I kind of liked them." Like,
when you do this with the headliner and you both eat shit, and then you're talking about, "Man, that was awful." They're like, "What are you talking about? That was great."
Oh, that.
And they're like, "Oh no, I thought I did good. I don't know what you're talking about."
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
That drives me. Like, I was in the same room as you, dude. We did the same, and they were terrible. I had fun. No, you didn't.
Probably the worst gig, though, wasn't that. The worst one was in Elko, Nevada.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever done that. It's a bad casino town.
No.
It's around a bunch of mining communities. It's gnarly. But, so I'm with the headliner, and the contract that the headliner, because this wasn't a triple. This is one that the headliner booked himself and then just brought me along. Mm-hmm. And it was, the contract said there had to be 6 people in the showroom or no show.
Okay.
And we still get paid, you know, all that. So there's a showroom, there's a bar in a showroom, and there's no one in the showroom. It's a half hour after showtime, still no one in the showroom. They've announced it twice and no one has gone to the showroom.
Like, no one's biting.
So we're like, and there's people in the bar. They just don't want to watch comedy, which is understandable.
Right. Yeah, you've been in a mine all day. It's the last thing you want to do is get some guy talking about his dick.
I'm over here dealing with my black lung.
Yes.
Anyway, so we go up to the bartender, and headliner's like, okay, there's no one here. We're going to go. And she's like, oh, okay, fine. And he's like, okay, but you still have to pay us.
Right.
She's like, I have to pay you even if you don't do a show? And he's like, yeah. She's like, oh, well, I'll get 6 people in the showroom.
No.
And so she went and made 6 of the bar regulars go sit in the showroom. Just 4 people that had the chance for free
to watch Cameron. Being forced to watch you
and
guys.
Now they're essentially paying, like, with time, like, to go watch a show they don't want to go to.
Right.
So there's 6 people, 6 hostile people.
Sure.
And I'm the opener. There's no intro.
Right.
I go up to a cold stage
and
I start like trying to engage. I'm a better comic. This is like 2 years in.
Uh-huh.
I'm a better comic than I was. So I kind of have some skills and I get them. I get a couple of them a little bit by talking to them, mm-hmm. doing crowd work. But anytime I go out off to material, I lose them.
Nothing.
About it's very middling.
Right.
Because they're super hostile.
Mm-hmm.
About 12 minutes in and I have to do 30. This guy goes, all right, bring up the next comic.
So guy in the audience immediately becomes the MC.
He's like, just no, let's go on next.
Wow.
And I'm like, I have to do my time to get paid. I think like if I get off, I'm not sure that I'll get paid.
Right.
So I'm explaining this to them. So I'm going to stay up here for 30 minutes.
Right.
And the guy goes, he stands up and he says, I work hard all day long. And I come here to relax, not to listen to you. So bring up the next comic. He's big and strong.
Sure.
I'm on stage, and then the headliner stands up and just starts yelling at the guy in the crowd and being like, hey, buddy, why don't you take 10 minutes out of your busy schedule? Go fuck yourself. And they're just like shouting back at each other.
And you're on stage and with a microphone.
I'm limply holding the microphone, right. Just like letting them fight with each other, letting them hash this out for 5 minutes.
Right.
And I'm like, well, this counts as my time. Yeah,
just keep going. 15 more minutes. You guys keep yelling.
So they yelled for a while, and then I'm like, okay, so back to me.
You're right. So I'm Mormon.
And they're just totally hostile, nothing there. And so then I bring up the headliner. He has to do comedy to the people that he's just been fighting
with.
He
just berated.
Yeah. And they ended up, like, a bunch of them left. And
right.
We finished it up with a couple people paying attention. But it was
oh my God.
It was really brutal.
That sounds like a terrible... The one thing you don't want to perform in front of people that you've already just yelled at.
Well, and that... chose not to see you, and then we're forced to.
Right, because, like, yeah. I was about to say, because the bartender was like, you guys just go in there and watch this. I don't want to pay these fucking idiots. I'll buy you guys drinks if you just go in there and watch the show.
Well, that's just spite.
Yeah.
She just didn't want to pay us not to do a show
right.
that they didn't want to see anyway.
Sure.
It was horrible. And we've all done shows where you're, like, in a bar where people didn't know comedy was going to happen. Right. That's bad enough.
Right.
They turn off the game that people are watching,
right.
and then they turn to you, and it's like, But these are people that were just
forced in.
Like, please, I need you to go into that room. And,
I don't want to pay these guys.
Yeah.
God.
Dreadful.
That's insane. Well, so when are you recording your special?
April 21st.
April 21st. Dude, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, man, this was so much fun.
It was a blast.
Thank
you. Plug your open mic, plug Adrenaline, plug all your stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I host 2 open mics a week in L.A. If you're an L.A. comic, you should check them out. They're both really good. The Ice House on Wednesday nights at 7:30. Mm-hmm. I think it's the hottest mic in town right now. There's a full crowd of people paying attention every week. You do 4-minute sets. It's really good. And then Fridays at Sabori Cultura. Adrenaline is a comedy challenge show where comedians draw challenges out of a bucket and have to complete harrowing and difficult challenges while doing their sets.
Right.
Every show, like, there's at least one thing happens that's just like bonkers good.
Like what do you mean?
Like, just like a trans, because it's all random. They draw
in a bucket. They have to do a challenge and stand up, but with the challenge.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I don't know what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. I know what the possibilities are.
Right.
But I don't know who's going to get
who's going to get what. Okay.
So, but at least once every show, guaranteed, it's happened every time. Some comic gets a challenge and they just do something that's amazing. Mm-hmm. That, like, Nick Vatterott. Do you know Nick? Mm-mm. So funny. Comic out of Chicago. He did it, and he drew a challenge where he had to do impressions of famous comedians. So, like, people would yell out a famous comedian, then he had to do his jokes in that while pretending to be that comedian.
Right, okay.
And he did it like it was his job. Like, he got, like, 6 different comics and just did an amazing Dane Cook, Chris D'Elia, Bobcat Goldthwait. And it's like he had all these impressions and he was doing amazing material and, like, bringing all these side things. I can't even explain it, but everyone that saw it says it's one of the best things I've ever seen.
Oh, wow.
Like, it was so just amazing. So much laughing.
So you get those, like, little, like, organic moments.
These
that
little
you're never
crazy
gonna replicate.
Things
yeah.
that you'll never see
sure.
otherwise.
Yeah.
Amy Miller did it, who's hilarious, and she got one where she had to sing her jokes.
Oh, God.
To karaoke tracks. So it's playing Sweet Home Alabama,
right.
and she's in, I am not a grade school teacher, and just like, but doing her material, and it's transcendent. It's
right.
amazing. I think I cannot recommend it enough to people. I know it's my show, but I'm telling you.
That's awesome.
It's the first Sunday of every month at the Improv Lab at 8 p.m.
Cool, and how can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, Piper Comedy, P-I-E-P-E-R Comedy, Facebook, Christian Piper.
Awesome.
And... thanks.
Yeah. You guys, please find Christian. Christian's a great comic. So funny. Good luck on your special.
Thanks, Justin.
Don't cuss.
I won't.
Don't say, oh, my God.
I mean, oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. Is that okay, or is that pushing it? It's a little edgy.
A little edgy.
Ivan, please go to the doctor after this.
Yes, please, Ivan. I'm worried about you.
I'm heading straight over there, actually.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Ivan has busted blood vessels in his face from coughing.
It's not
so
good.
Much.
We thought you were in a fight. You're like, no, just from coughing. Hey, while you're there, will you pick up some eye drops for me, please? Oh, my gosh. Ivan, how can people find you if you make it through the week?
At Ivan Ishkov.
Awesome. For our show, go to fosterthepodcast.com. Subscribe to Foster the Podcast on iTunes. For all my stand-up and show dates, go to Justin Comic on Twitter and Instagram. Also, check out our sponsors. Buy your mom or your wife or your girlfriend something for Mother's Day. Go to bouquetinabox.com. Enter promo code Foster. You save 15%. Bouquetinabox.com, fosterthepodcast.com. We'll see you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to Foster the Podcast.